This week on the show, a look ahead to Wild Card Weekend in the NFL, and a look back to the absolute gem of a first round from the college football playoff. Plus, Isaiah Thomas finally returns to the Garden, so why all the fanfare? All that and more coming up, calling it, starts right now. How's it going, everybody? Welcome to a midweek edition of the Calling It podcast. We were in no condition to bring you a show on Monday, which was January 1st, but it being NFL playoff time, college football playoff time, a little bit of everything, we had to get a show in. That being said, Alex Lebowitz is halfway across the world discussing the pros and cons of different fruits and vegetables on Twitter. So joining us on the Work Zest Hotline, he'll be our co-host today from the Asmund and Budick show of Sports on the Go 1 in New York, is Jake Asmund. Hello, Jake.
Hello, Alex. Thanks for having me on the show, and there's nothing I like the sound of more than being able to replace Alex Lebowitz, fill in for him on his own show.
Well, you're part of that whole wild discussion about the grapes and the zucchinis and the pears, right?
I was tagged in one of the tweets, and I checked my phone after not being on my phone for a little bit, and I saw I had like 27 Twitter notifications, and I thought, oh, God, what did I do now? Because, you know, usually I start things on Twitter. I'm not involved in practical jokes. And, you know, I see them talking about fruits and vegetables. And Lebowitz is comparing a piece of lettuce to Bill Russell. I haven't even read the entire thread yet. If you're interested, calling it fans, Alex Lebowitz, let's just say he's having a good time. And in Israel doing his thing.
Yeah, it's been going on for like 2 days. If you want to check it out, at Alex _ Lebowitz, he's at Jake Asmund, by the way, if you want to see him causing trouble out there. But while that's been going on, it's a nice little midweek filler for this, the week between the NFL regular season and the NFL playoffs. Season wrapped up on Sunday with the Patriots beating Jake Asmund's Jets. These are two teams going in two different directions, both directions I want to cover. Let's do a little live show planning here. What do you want to cover first, teams that made it or the teams that didn't?
Well, I'm a Jet fan, so all I know is teams that didn't make it. So we can start with maybe the teams that did make it. Your team, of course, the Patriots, they don't even have to play this week. They get to, you know, sit back and watch other teams pound each other on the football field. So we can start there if you want.
This has turned into an annual week off. And the Patriots, for the second year in a row, they played a semi-meaningless game in Week 17. They needed it for home field advantage. They got it. They stayed healthy, much in thanks to the Jets really not trying. And, you know, we were talking about this a little off the air, Jake, your show, the Asmund and Budick show, you guys are going to be at Radio Row in February. You're already expecting the Patriots to be there. Does any team have an easier path this year than the New England Patriots? Obviously, they're the number one seed. Obviously, they have home field advantage, but I'm saying this as a Patriots fan, it feels too good to be true that once again, they're the favorite.
I don't know how they can't be the favorite. I mean, you look at their road to the Super Bowl, and I mean, you just laid it out, but that's why I was so upset and I'll acknowledge this on your show. I've said it before. As a diehard Patriot hater, you know, the fact that Pittsburgh blew that game in the manner in which they did a couple of weeks ago, to me, I mean, that was the AFC Championship game right there. To me, the only way New England does not get back to the Super Bowl would be if they had to go on the road for an AFC Championship game in Pittsburgh. And even then, I still would not count out Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, and the Patriots. So, yeah, I mean, I think they have to be the clear-cut favorites to get back to the Super Bowl. They are the defending champs. They get there every single year, it feels like, at this point. And at the end of the day, you look at the AFC. Does Blake Bortles scare you? I mean, I know Alex Smith beat them in Week 1, but, you know, they're a totally different team than they were in Week 1. He doesn't scare me. And Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh. Until they actually exercise the demons and beat the New England Patriots, I can't pick them. So I think New England's got to be the clear-cut favorite to go back to the Super Bowl.
And it's weird to say that the Patriots going in – I mean, they're pretty healthy, and it's always relying on health with them. But given what they've lost this year, it still feels like they have more players coming back than they lost really down the stretch there. Kyle Van Noy played a little bit against the Jets. He's been incredibly valuable to that defense. He didn't play down the stretch. I almost said Logan Ryan. Eric Rowe continues to get better, get healthier at the cornerback spot. They haven't had maybe their best running back, and James White, as good as Deion Lewis has played, he may not even be their best running back. James White hasn't played, so you see teams losing guys. We still need to see with Pittsburgh what the deal with Antonio Brown is. He should play, but how healthy is he? Jacksonville's very beat up at that wide receiver position. And then you really, it's two tiers. It's those three, and then Kansas City, Tennessee, and believe it or not, Buffalo, they're in the AFC. So the first round games, just to catch up here, we'll have the in the NFC, the Rams and the Falcons, and the Saints and the Panthers. And in the AFC, the Chiefs and the Bills, or pardon me, the Jaguars and the Bills and the Chiefs and the Titans. So it really is a mid to late 90s playoff slate there. The one game that stands out for me, and Jake, we'll go to you after this, but the one game that really stands out for me, the one game I'm really looking to forward to is the Falcons and the Rams, because this is kind of the team that should have been that wasn't, and the team that was supposed to be nowhere close and is. And obviously we know what the Falcons have been through in the last 350 days, and I picked them not to make the playoffs at the beginning of the year. I picked them not to make it at the midway point. They just snuck in there in week 17. And the Rams, to me, are my favorite in the NFC. I know they're a 3 seed. I know they got hopped by a couple of teams, but that team just wins so many games in so many different ways. They can win at home, on the road. I really think that game, if the Rams can win it, is going to represent a changing in the guard in the NFC. That being said, the Falcons have the experience. The Rams are a really young team. I wouldn't be shocked if 6 seed Atlanta went into LA and took a game there. So that's the one game I'm really looking forward to. How about you?
Well, I think you look at the NFC playoffs in particular. You know, we just spent time talking about the Patriots being the clear-cut favorites out of the AFC. And the NFC, I mean, Alex, if I sit back and said to you the Atlanta Falcons are going to be in the Super Bowl, would you be that shocked? If I said to you the Carolina Panthers are going to be in the Super Bowl, I don't think anyone would be that stunned. The Saints, the Vikings, even the Eagles. I know they don't have Carson Wentz, but they do have home field advantage. They'll have two home playoff games. Would it stun you if the Eagles even got to the Super Bowl? I don't necessarily think it would. So if you look at the NFC, I think you could make a case for all those teams. The thing about the Rams that I love, and I agree with you, I think when the Rams play their A game, they are the best team in the NFC. When Goff is playing like a franchise caliber quarterback that he's shown to be, when Gurley's running the football well, when Wade Phillips is scheming up a great
defense. Gurley your MVP? Real quick while we're touching on this, Gurley your MVP?
I'd still give it to Brady because I think a quarterback is more valuable than a running back, but Gurley had about as good of a year as you could possibly have, all things considered. But I'll say this, Alex, you look at the Rams, when they're at their best, they're as good as anybody. But the thing with them, let's say they do get by Atlanta, they got to go to Minnesota. Not an easy place to play for anybody. I think what really hurts the LA Rams is the fact that, you know, they finished as the 3 seed, which means they got to go and play the 2 seed. It would have been better if they finished as the 4 seed, because then they could have got the Eagles in the divisional round, and that changes a lot. But that being said, I think you can make a case for a lot of teams in the NFC, and I'm definitely intrigued about that game, and I'm going to be locked into that Carolina-New Orleans game as well.
Yeah, that's a couple of teams, you know, they're really liking the fact that Minnesota may come out of this as the top seed, because what's always been the problem for the NFC South, having to go up and play in the Northeast or the Great Lakes in January and play in those conditions. Outside of Philly, all of those are either indoor teams or southern teams. Actually, they're all indoor teams except for Carolina, who plays in Carolina. I know they're supposed to get 6 inches of snow tomorrow, but I don't think you can count on that going forward. So, and then on the other side, you're going to have teams having to go to Pittsburgh and having to go to New England. So you're really going to see the difference of battle test in terms of the elements and travel out of the AFC as opposed to the NFC. Obviously, the one caveat being there's a good chance that the NFC, whoever represents the NFC, will be playing their second game in a month in Minnesota.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you made a great point with that. You know, you remember the last time you saw this LA Rams team have to go up into Minnesota. I mean, that defense shut down what was the number one ranked offense in football and finished as the number one ranked scoring offense in football. So Minnesota, to me, is one of those teams that a lot of people are going to pick them. The only reason why I'm a little hesitant is just because we have not seen Case Keenum play in a playoff game. You know, we've never seen this young group go out there and win some big-time games. But let's be honest, if Philly gets picked off in the divisional round and Minnesota's going to set themselves up with potentially two home playoff games, and then if they do get to the Super Bowl, a home game in the Super Bowl, I mean, Minnesota's a dangerous team if Case Keenum can play like the guy that he played like, you know, he played like a franchise-caliber quarterback in the middle of the year. Can he keep that up through the playoffs? That remains to be seen.
I mean, it's really that Jeff Fisher trio, right, that's just elevated their game this year in Goff, Goff, Keenum, and Foles. Elevated, I guess, in quotes. He's playing. He's on the number one seed. But speaking of Jeff Fisher, some coaches not so lucky. They're not in the playoffs. Many of them are unemployed. Black Monday's come and gone. Let's start here, Jake. Give me one coach that should have been fired that wasn't, and give me a coach that got fired that shouldn't have been.
So to answer your first part of the question, I have two coaches that should have been fired that were not, and they both reside in the same state. How the heck did Hugh Jackson not get fired after going 0-16? Forget the fact they went 1-15 the year before, and this guy even says we're not going 1-15 a year later. Yes, Hugh, you're going to go 0-16, so technically you're right. So forget the fact that he's now combined 1-31 after two seasons as the head coach of the Browns. Forget that for a second. Just picture yourself as a Browns fan thinking about your football team, knowing that you're going to bring back a head coach with that resume attached to him. And then the other coach, it's got to be Marvin Lewis. I mean, we talked about this on our show this morning. 2 weeks ago, he was the one that was leaving on his own. Now, he's getting a two-year contract extension?
Is it even surprising at this point? He's the fourth longest tenured coach in professional sports. Popovich, Belichick, Mike Socha for some reason, and then Marvin Lewis.
Is he a Jedi, Alex?
Doesn't belong.
It makes no sense. And, you know,
he's
you could play a
game. Leader.
I'll play this game with you. We did this on our show this morning. Name me a year between 2003 and 2017. Just throw out a random year. I'll tell you what Marvin Lewis did that year.
He 2008.
He didn't win a playoff game.
There you go. That's a hell of a game right there.
2009, still didn't. 2010, he didn't. Let's go to 2004. He still didn't win a playoff game. The guy's been a head coach for 15 years in the National Football League with the Bengals, and he has not won one playoff game. Bill Belichick has been to 7 Super Bowls as a head coach and won 5 of them. They've been around basically the same amount of time. Belichick in, 2001? I think it was his first year. 2000?
No, 2 year gap. Lewis, second longest tenured coach. You're absolutely right.
Unbelievable when you think about the fact that Bill Belichick has been to 7 Super Bowls. Marvin Lewis, forget going to a divisional round, a conference championship. The guy has never won a playoff game. It's remarkable. It really is.
On top of that, to go back to your Hugh Jackson point, you realize the Browns have won a playoff game more recently than the Bengals. Because they had the Derek Anderson, Braylon Edwards year that they were, 10-6, 9-7 that year. They were actually decent. I got to go with you, though, on the Bengals. Just that team clearly, and it's a Mike Brown issue. He's fine making money. He doesn't care about winning games. He wants to operate in the green. They're drawing enough fans. They make the playoffs every once in a while. He doesn't want to spend more money to make more money, and as long as that's true, nothing's going to change in Cincinnati. Who got the axe that should still be employed?
Jack Del Rio in Oakland. I didn't think he deserved to lose his job. I know they had a bad year, but to me, to fire the coach when the team was banged up, Derek Carr was playing hurt the entire year. I think that was obvious based on watching him. You know, he played like a scared quarterback in the pocket, some would say. You know, I think you look at the Raiders, and they didn't have the year everyone thought they would have, but, you know, to fire the coach – after one bad season, after, you know, he took them to 12-4 last year, and if Derek Carr didn't get hurt, who knows how far they could have gone. I didn't think that was fair. Now, if they get John Gruden, I understand the move, but that's another conversation for, I guess, maybe a different time. I don't think John Gruden is as great of a head coach as maybe some like to make it seem that he is. That being said, I didn't think Del Rio should have been fired, but you know, at the end of the day, it's football, it's the Raiders, it's Mark Davis and his weird haircut, and nothing they do should surprise anyone, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on that. Look, if they get Gruden, it's all well and good. I actually think he's a pretty good coach. He's a better coach than Del Rio. I think we can both agree on that.
He is, but people want to make John Gruden like he's the second coming of Bill Belichick or Vince Lombardi. John Gruden was a solid NFL head coach, but look at what he did in Tampa. Right? He won the Super Bowl primarily with Tony Dungy's players, and then his last couple of years, he didn't really develop a quarterback. They went had a couple 9-7s, and they fired him. He didn't do anything that great.
I think it's similar to what's going on with Tony Romo right now. Everything just seems so much easier in the booth. We've kind of gotten used to him on Monday Night Football picking teams apart. You're like, oh, yeah, he can still coach. We see Gruden's film room, this and that, Gruden's QB camp. We're like, oh, yeah, no, he knows what he's doing, and it's a lot different when you're actually in there doing it.
Now, he hasn't been an NFL head coach in 10 years. You know, right. I understand you're still around the game. You're covering Monday Night Football every week and talking to teams and players and coaches and all that. I get that. But, I mean, there's a difference between actually going through the day-to-day grind of coaching and, you know, doing 16 regular season games a year for ESPN. There just is.
Like, look at how much ridicule Arizona State got for hiring Herm Edwards. I would say this is just as ridiculous as that. Look, if they know they're going to get Gruden and they feel it's an upgrade, fine. They made a mistake trading him the first time they did. But if they don't know for sure they're getting Gruden and they let a good coach and Jack Del Rio go in a year where there's really not a lot on the coaching market, this is a bigger mistake than trading Gruden the first time. I'll also say Jim Caldwell in Detroit. I know he's not considered a great coach, but they were over 500. They got some good young pieces there. They do have, albeit an overpaid, a franchise quarterback. Aaron Rodgers, not going to be around forever. I think they were in the best position of anybody in that division to kind of climb into the window. I know the Vikings just went 13-3, but their quarterback situation's up in the air. So I think Jim Caldwell was building something good up in Detroit, albeit he built it slowly, but I thought he deserved a little more time there. Real quick before we wrap up our NFL segment, Jake, like you mentioned top of the segment, you are a Jets fan. You were one of the Jets fans that was very vocal at the beginning of the year saying you wanted a top pick. You were fine with them not winning many games this year. They went 5-11. They had that hot start. It kind of petered out, but they're not in the top five, I believe, right? They're going to be number six in the draft.
And they're picking six, yep.
They're picking six, which realistically could put them out of reach of Rosen or Darnold, and that's another discussion. But we kind of saw what Todd Bowles, as we saw what that front office is. Was this season a disappointment for the New York Jets?
It wasn't a disappointment because technically they overachieved, but I'm tired of this organization settling.
Well, let me rephrase that then. Were you disappointed in this season by the Jets?
I can't say I was disappointed because what we learned about the Jets is, A, they have a lot more talent than anyone gave them credit for. That's obvious. Two, their GM, I think, is pretty competent, and he proved that. Outside of the worst draft pick in the history of draft picks, you can make a case in Christian Hackenberg. If you take that out, and I know you can't because that's a big deal. You're drafting a guy in the second round and he doesn't play in 2 years. That's only happened to one other player in the history of the NFL. So you got to understand how big of a deal that is that, you know, we didn't even see Hackenberg in 2 years. That being said, I think Mike Maccagnan as a GM did a nice job with some low-key signings that ended up really helping this team. I really question, though, if Todd Bowles is the long-term answer at coach. He did some things this year that were okay. The team played hard for him, but the two times the Jets were favored to win on the road, they didn't show up or played horrible. I mean, they got destroyed by a Broncos team that came into the game having lost eight in a row. So there are some red flags with Bowles' in-game coaching, lack of adjustments from half to half. There are some red flags there. That being said, the Jets, they found out they had more talent than we thought. And even though they're picking sixth, they do have a lot of salary cap space. They have $100 million in cap space. Plus, they also have a GM that has shown the ability to be very aggressive and wheel and deal. Meaning, if they love a guy, it would not shock me one bit if they try to move up to number three where Indy's picking, or number four, that extra Cleveland pick, to go and get that quarterback. I think one thing is for sure, Alex, at the end of this season, you knew that Hackenberg and Petty are not your long-term answers. McCown's 38 years old, so if he's back, it's to mentor whoever they draft. Either they sign Kirk Cousins in free agency, or they go all in on a quarterback, you know, via the draft. If it's Josh Allen, Baker Mayfield, who knows? But I think one thing is for sure, they will have a new quarterback starting for them in 2018.
Obviously, we'll be talking a lot of draft stuff down the road on Calling It. Before we move on here, I just want to remind everybody, well, they're snowed in tomorrow. They should check out DraftKings.com. At DraftKings, there are so many ways to play between public contests or private contests. You can compete with your friends. They got beginner, casual, all kind of skill levels. And the best part, you can win cash doing it. And if you use the code CLNS at DraftKings.com to play free with your first deposit, you can play free with your first deposit for a share of $10,000 in total prizes. Don't wait. Use code CLNS at DraftKings.com right now to choose your lineup. And you can seriously cash in tonight, tomorrow, whenever. That's code CLNS only at DraftKings.com. Check it out while you're snowed in. The game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Well, we're getting ready for one playoff football tournament. Another one is in the midst. We'll talk about that on the other side. You're listening to Calling It, powered by CLNS.
Calling It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Calling It. Alex Barth alongside Jake Asman joining us on the WorkZest Hotline. He's in for Alex Lebowitz. And like I said before the break, waiting on the NFL playoffs, another playoff in full swing. Well, as full swing, I guess, as you can get with a 14 playoff, but more on that later. College football playoffs, Monday, we got an amazing game for everybody and an amazing game for me. Georgia over Oklahoma in an all-time classic Rose Bowl, then Alabama knocking off Clemson in the Sugar Bowl. Let's start with this, Jake. The first great football game, I think, of our lifetimes, at least a real great college football game I attached to my childhood, is the 05 Rose Bowl, Vince Young versus Reggie Bush. The iconic game has been 30 for 30s made about it. Where did this, in your mind, stack up to that game?
I think it's got to be right there, right? I mean, you could make a case this was just as good. The only difference was this was a semifinal playoff game and it wasn't for a national title. This was awesome, though. I mean, as someone who's a casual college football fan, obviously being from New York, we don't really have, like, a team that every New Yorker is like, oh, Roll Tide.
Oh, not a big Rutgers guy? Come on. Yeah,
I'm sorry, you know, Rutgers for all you Jersey people out there. They're not exactly the kings of the Big Ten, if you will. So, you know, as someone who just casually watches college football, and I've watched a lot more college football this year because, you know, as a Jet fan, you're trying to, you know, take a look at some of the good quarterbacks that are out there. Baker Mayfield, how do you not watch that game and just, you know, come away from it being so impressed with, you know, his ability to make plays outside the pocket, his leadership, some of the throws he makes were just tremendous. And what a great back and forth game. My only issue with it is I hate college football overtime, man. I'm more of an NFL fan, obviously. And I don't like the way that these games are decided with lack of field position. You basically eliminate special teams in overtime outside of the field goal kicker. And I know it did play a part with the block kick, but you know, it was an amazing game, though. I mean, to get double overtime in a Rose Bowl playoff game, I mean, it speaks for itself. It was incredible.
I saw so many people on Twitter throughout the game saying, you know, I didn't like Baker Mayfield, but I like him now. Oh, now I get why people are in on Baker. Like, that was such a great game for him. But that being said, the one thing that separates this for me from the Texas-USC game is that game had Reggie Bush and Vince Young, who are two of the all-time great college football players. Baker Mayfield's a lot of fun, right? Heisman winner, and he's an outstanding player, but I wouldn't put him on the Reggie Bush level. And that's, to me, what this game was missing, was that transcendent superstar. I don't know if Baker Mayfield is quite at that level, but an absolutely outstanding game. And I disagree with you. I actually like college overtime better. It's not perfect. I don't like the fact the game could be decided on a field goal. I think we all thought the Oklahoma kicker was going to choke on that first kick, right? That kid just screamed chuck job. But what I hate about the NFL, and they've started to fix this, is that a team can win without the other team getting the ball. So I like the balance. I like the back and forth of college. But you're right. There shouldn't be a field goal that's that important at that stage in the game. If it's, you know, NFL overtime, you drive all the way down the field, that's different. But, you know, to go three and out, kick a chip shot field goal and still be able to win the game, to me, in a way, ruins it. But I guess we can all be glad the Oklahoma kicker didn't miss the first kick, because that would have been a shame if that game just ended simply not a blocked field goal, but just a missed field goal.
Absolutely. And Alex, you made a good point about, you know, maybe we don't have that transcendent superstar in this game. Who knows? Maybe Baker Mayfield, we look back on it, we realize how special this guy was. Part of that also could be this, though. You know, we don't know because it just happened, but, you know, Jake Fromm's only a freshman. To see a Georgia quarterback do that.
That's true.
I mean, who knows what will happen? He still has two more years in school, obviously. He's a true freshman. And, you know, who knows where his career is headed? I think a lot of people already think that he's going to be a future first-round pick, at, you know, in the NFL. So, you know, I think the rosters of these teams, it will be really cool to revisit a couple of years and see where some of these players are. Because who knows? Maybe we do have some unreal college football players that played in this game that we just didn't realize at the time.
Well, it's going to be interesting with him real quick before we move on to the other game is that he wasn't the starting quarterback at the beginning of the year. It was Jacob Eason who got hurt. And he'll be competing for the starting job next year. And they got, and I'm blanking on his name, but the number one quarterback recruit in the class of 2018 is going to Georgia. So as well as he played, there's going to be some serious quarterback competition. And, you know, it's the SEC. If you're not doing the job, they'll find somebody else who will. Speaking of the SEC and getting the job done, Alabama, Roll Tide, the three match against Clemson. Each team had taken one. Alabama was all over the Tigers in that game. I think, and maybe I'm a little biased, that was the most fair representation of those two teams. Granted, Clemson didn't have Deshaun Watson this time, but Alabama had to rebuild pretty much their whole defense. They didn't have some of the star wide receivers they've had in past years, but really what that game should tell you is this is going to be a heck of a final on the defensive side of the football. I wanted Oklahoma-Alabama. I wanted to see Baker Mayfield against the Alabama defense, but this Georgia running game against that Alabama front seven, who had maybe as dominant a game as any front seven has had in the entire nation this year in that game against Clemson, those Georgia running backs against those front seven for Alabama, that's going to be the matchup to watch. And it's going to be just about as good trenches football as you get in the national championship.
What scares me, though, is, you know, someone who's seen Nick Saban do this for so many years now, it just seems like every single year this guy's competing for a national championship, giving Nick Saban the opportunity to game plan for a freshman quarterback. I know Fromm was unreal in the Rose Bowl, but that scares me just a little bit to think that a true freshman that was, you know, at senior prom just, what, 8 months ago,
right,
is now going to go out there and take down a Nick Saban-led team in a national championship game. So I think Alabama is rightfully the favorite in this game. They opened, I think, as a four-point favorite. I probably think that number will go a little higher when the money starts to pour in on Bama. That being said, I hope it's an epic game, and I'll be rooting for Georgia. I know you're a Bama guy, but as someone who doesn't want to see the same teams win all the time, the Patriots and Alabama, I got to root against, you know, Nick Saban and the Tide. I'm sorry, man.
I mean, I get all the time that I'm a bandwagoner. I get it. Like, a rough year for me in football is 6 losses. Like, a really rough year. But I'm from New England. We're in the, for those listening, in the Gillette adjacent studios today, not in Wellesley. And Alabama was the first college I ever got accepted to. I went to a D3 school, just like Jake did. My real favorite college football team, obviously, Roll Bombers, of Ithaca College. But I can have a D1 team, and it's the first school I got into. Yeah, I like Alabama, too. The other, you mentioned the true freshman. The other stat I love going into this game, it's been talked to death, but I'll say it. Nick Saban, 12-0 all time against his former assistants, Kirby Smart, longtime defensive coordinator at Alabama. I like Alabama. I think it'll be close, but I think Alabama pulls away late. I like Alabama by multiple scores. I think, and I talked about Georgia's running game. I think Alabama's running game is going to be able to wear down Georgia. They're going to be able to start popping off some big runs late, similar to what Georgia did to Oklahoma, and kind of pull away late in that game.
It's going to be a fun game. I'm definitely excited about it. If I was betting, I'd probably would lean with you. I would take Alabama. I'd lay the 4 points or whatever the line is up to right now. I think Alabama.
It's like 4.5 right now, but.
Yeah. So I'd go with Alabama.
All right. Enough football talk for us. There is a big basketball game this week, either tonight, if you're listening to the day we release it, but the game tips off in like 2 hours. I'm going to guess you already watched the game. We're not going to talk about the game itself. It's the story that's surrounded. It's really nuts. More NBA drama on the other side. You're listening to Callin' It. Powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Callin' It. Alex Barth, joined by Jake Asman on the WorkSess Hotline. Alex Lebowitz still out. He'll be out next week, too. So we'll have another co-host for that one as well. I hope he's enjoying his little break. Obviously, we at the show hope he's having a good time. Somebody who's not having a good time is Isaiah Thomas. And he is returning to Boston Wednesday night. This show, we're recording this right now at 12 past 5, so this probably won't be up until about half an hour before the tip. I'm guessing most people won't listen to this until after the game. So we'll leave the game aside. And Isaiah's not playing, so we don't really need to talk about his performance. But for those of you who haven't followed the story, and I'm guessing maybe some people following Jake, some New Yorkers, if you're not as filled in, Isaiah Thomas, right, former Celtic, took him to the conference finals last year, got traded. He's not going to play in this game. There's some speculation he would. This would be his first game back. He played against the Trailblazers on Tuesday night, played well. And it does not want to play the back-to-back. He had the choice to make the Celtics game the first game. He chose not to. In the last couple of weeks, he has come out with random media attacks against the Celtics. He said that their doctors lied to him about how much playing in the playoffs last year could hamper his hip injury, and said he would not have played if the Celtics had given him the correct information. Just to be clear, he's accusing the Celtics of doing something illegal there. And then he came out earlier this week and asked the Celtics, unprompted, to not play a tribute video. He says it's because he's not playing and his family won't be there and he wants his family to see it. That's fine. But, and he, I think he knows this. The only other time the Cavs are in town this year is the Paul Pierce jersey retirement. Obviously that game's going to be all about Paul Pierce. They're planning things throughout the games. Would be a little weird to play Isaiah Thomas's tribute video in the middle of it. Look, I loved Isaiah when he was here. He's a competitor. I think what he did playing after the death of his sister was one of the gutsiest performances I've ever seen. Not take anything away from the guy, but he needs to stop being a bitch. Like, oh my God, get over it. You got traded for a better player. Okay, Kyrie, better player. The team got better. Get over yourself. To ask a team not play a tribute video, Jake, and I'm talking a lot here, I'll let you get in a second, but to ask a team to not play a tribute video is one of the most self-centered acts I've ever seen from an athlete. Like, holy cow. Do you realize the level of self-absorption you have to be in to make that request unprompted? Get over yourself, Isaiah, all right? You had a lot of fun here in a year and a half. You're far from an all-time Celtic great. Any other franchise is an all-time great. This is the Boston Celtics. You're here for a year and a half. You were a fun little moment. You're a spring break hookup. Move on. There's committed relationships this team has with their superstars that need to move on beyond you. Get over yourself.
You treat Isaiah Thomas like he was like Jeremy Lin on the Knicks to have a like 2-week period where he's the best player in the NBA. And then, you know, Knicks fans – they wanted him to come back.
In a way, he was. And I think similar. The Jeremy Lin comparison is absolutely applicable here.
It's similar. The difference is obviously Isaiah, you know, took this team to a conference championship.
Right. It was a longer span, but it wasn't in the grand scheme of things that long. In his first year here, they didn't do much.
No, it makes sense. As an outsider looking on it, I haven't, you know, followed the story as closely as someone like you has in the market, you know, being up to date with everything going on. But from afar, I thought it was so surprising that you had a player ask not to receive a tribute video. And then the excuse that you said he gave was because, oh, his family's not going to be there because he's not playing in the game. But, you know, so what? I mean, they're offering you a tribute video.
He didn't ask not to receive one. He asked not to receive one Thursday night. He still wants one. But when it's convenient for him.
Right. So, like, to dictate when you want a tribute video, that to me is a little weak. That being said, he deserves it. And there's a reason why they wanted to give him a tribute video in the first place.
Well, to be fair, and Jake, some in-the-market knowledge for you, this is a team that gives everybody a tribute video. Jonas Jerebko and Kelly Olynyk got tribute videos this year. I mean, they throw these things out like hotcakes.
So it's like Oprah giving out cars. You know, you get a car. One of those.
Yeah, it's to use something you'd acknowledge. It's like the Jets throwing draft picks at bad quarterbacks. It will never end.
Of course. It will probably continue with, you know, check back in with me about a year from now.
Christian Hackenberg would get a tribute video on the Celtics the way they give them out.
That is impressive. Christian Hackenberg, who I've never seen throw regularly. You know, here's the great
thing. It wouldn't be a long tribute video, but he'd get one.
Well, let me tell you what the tribute video would be. It would be Christian Hackenberg just standing there on the sidelines doing nothing because no one's ever actually seen him play. So I would have no idea what that looks like.
At least it's not him putting a helmet on over a hat. But anyway.
Oh, that was another great moment in Jets history.
Anyway, yeah, I can't think of another example like this. And this, to me, is the difference between this year's Celtics team and last year's Celtics team. Last year's team was a lot of fun. They were the scrappy underdogs. But they were the underdog. And between Isaiah Thomas and Jay Crowder, Kelly Olynyk, when they were up on teams, when they were winning, it was a lot of fun. And they were out there pumping up the crowd and jumping all over the place. And it was fun. But the second thing started going against them, whether it was a bad call or somebody in a difficult shot or whatever, Jay Crowder is yelling at the ref. Isaiah has his hands on his head. His players disappearing left and right. And this, to me, what Isaiah is doing is the embodiment of last year's team, why Celtics fans got too high on last year's team. This year's team is different. We saw what they did against the Rockets. We saw what they did against the Thunder early in the year. This team has some cojones that last year's team didn't have. And what Isaiah is doing right now exemplifies why they were never going to win with Isaiah Thomas as their captain. They were never going to win with Isaiah Thomas as their second best player. Horford's still better. Okay, it's a game that height is still very important. And this exemplifies every reason why they needed to make the Kyrie Irving trade. And look, I don't expect Isaiah to come out and say, I get Kyrie's a better player than me. But deep down, you have to understand kind of what's going on here, you think.
And that was going to be the point I was going to make. I'm glad you brought that up. I was going to say the same thing. You know, I think at the end of the day, Isaiah has to realize it's a business. You know, the Celtics were not trying to trade you because they wanted to spite you or they didn't appreciate what you did. They got Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving is not just a better player. I would argue he's a significantly better player.
Oh, yeah.
Than Isaiah Thomas, and he's younger and already has proven he can win a championship and be big in the big moments in championship games.
And isn't listed 5'8". Listed.
Yes. And it makes a big difference.
People talk about how Isaiah's size helped him, and it did in ways, but it hurt him a lot. He couldn't play defense. He could be right in the jersey of somebody, but if they're 6'4", they're going to shoot over him. I feel like Celtics fans were too and NBA fanboys were too eager to ignore Isaiah Thomas's height when it does make a difference in that league.
Absolutely. And don't even get me started with the NBA fanboys. A lot of my friends, you know, from school are NBA junkies. It's just they talk about the analytics and they talk about how much they love this player and you know, how
the
great
summer
the
league.
NBA is. Oh, don't even get me started with the NBA summer league, folks. The worst. The worst kind of
terrible.
People are the ones that watch every summer league game and try to analyze.
I'll take LeVar's bullcrap league over the summer league.
Yes, I would too. And I'll tell you what. If you want to know something about the NBA, I will give you an NBA Finals preview right now. Today's date is January 3rd. Let's preview the NBA Finals. It's going to be the Warriors. It's going to be the Cavs. All right, who you got and why? I'm going Golden State because they're the best team. They won last year. They'll do it again. That's my pick. You can end the NBA season now. I'm 98% confident I will be right. That's my biggest problem with the NBA.
Jake, I know you're a fan of Old Takes Exposed. I think they may need to hear about that one. But, you know, I agree with you. And look, injuries can change things. Obviously, that's always the comeback to that. But if that's the case, then if you're an NBA fan, you're rooting for injuries, which is no fun either. And then you're a bitter NFL fan, which I love the bitter NFL fan. I am one, but it's not necessarily something you're proud to be. But so, yeah, Isaiah Thomas returned to the Garden. Obviously, a lot of drama. I hope, and Paul Pierce, my favorite basketball player of all time, but I hope that they do not, I don't want to use the word sully because that's a little strong, but I really hope they don't try to taint Paul Pierce's day with an Isaiah Thomas tribute video. Because I know there was talk last year about passing the torch and Isaiah being the new Paul Pierce and this and that. No. Paul Pierce meant something else to this team in this city, and Isaiah was good, but he is nowhere close, left nowhere close to the legacy that Paul Pierce left the Boston Celtics, and I hope everybody remembers that come February 11th. That will just about do it for us. We got, you know, it's. Do you know the name of the winter storm? I just figured this out before we popped on the air here, Jason.
It's something about a bomb or a cyclone. I heard something on the radio today.
I think it's a cyclone bomb or something. It's
outrageous.
Weather term for the storm. But no, they started naming the winter storms like hurricanes. So this it's a hashtag bomb cyclone. It has to do with the air pressure, but it is winter storm Grayson. So I don't know if you slip as much as you trip. But I think we all know that it's going to be a big D-bag of a storm. You got any good storm advice here before we go?
You know, I think the biggest thing is you got to go out there. You got to have a game plan. You have your game plan. Get that game plan in place. Study the film. You know, talk to your coaches. Believe in your off-season work ethic and go out there and perform. You know, that's what you got to do to go out there and stay afloat.
I'll just say this. Make sure you have Jack and John with you. Daniels and Jameson. That's my plan anyway. So while you're snowed in, listen to this. Give it multiple listens. Obviously, share it out on Twitter at Callin' the Podcast. We're on iTunes as well. You can catch us on the brand new CLNSmedia.com. Follow CLNS as well at CLNSmedia. Jake, you're just right at Jake Asman.
At Jake Asman. That's where you
How'd you end up with that one, you lucky dog?
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, just have to really pay off a lot of people. There's a lot of Jake Asmans out there.
Were you originally Jake Asman, or did you have to switch to that later?
I got very lucky. So I've been on Twitter probably longer than most. I joined Twitter in 2009, like May of 2009. Okay. So I was able to get my name, which I know is rare nowadays because it seems like every handle you want is taken. But I got lucky.
I mean, you know the story with mine, but long story short, it is now at Real Alex Barth, the whoever Alex Barth hasn't tweeted since like 2011. So again, yeah, you can get at us on social. Everybody enjoy the storm. Enjoy the first weekend of football. We will be back next Monday. Finally, a normal Monday show from the studios in Wellesley next week. So I will talk to you then. For Jake Asman, I'm Alex Barth. Have a good one, everybody.